This is Twa Teams One Street from the Evening Telegraph, the only podcast as obsessed with Dundee and Dundee United as you are. On this episode, we talk Dundee woes, where is Lawrence, and Bear offends an entire nation right at the end. Hello and welcome back to our wee podcast. You listen to George Cran filling in for Calm this week as he's off sunning himself on some time off. We still can't go anywhere, so I think he's going to be sunbathing in Baxter Park just around the corner. So I'd watch out if you're around there walking.
That's fine, Joe. That's not a very nice thing to say about Calm. you've put the fear of death in everybody walking through Baxter Park there. No, it's good, George. It's good, and summer is here, and that's nothing to do with the weather. Nicola Sturgeon's announced when the pubs are opening, so we're all set. I know it's a bit off yet, but we're getting excited. Things are brightening up. Maybe not on the exactly. Football front of Dens Park, though, eh?
It does feel like there's light at the end of the tunnel.
It's a disclaimer.
And with the Calm thing, it's just a warning to anyone who happens to be in the park, just in case there's a peely wally boy from Paisley in there. But parachuted in the place of Calm is the boss man. It's Sean Hamilton. How you doing, Sean?
I'm very well, thank you. It's not so much a light at the end of the tunnel as a pint at the end of the tunnel, isn't it?
I know.
Yeah. I don't know about you. I can't wait to get back to the pub. Oh my goodness.
I know.
That first pint, you're right. Magical.
Now, before we get started, Sean, you're going to have to be truthful, I think. Uh-huh. Has Calum actually done an Aubameyang this week, and he's broken some unknown protocol of DC Thompson and has to sit in the stands and think about what he's done?
I'm not going to confirm nor deny that that's the case. Let's just say he's having a big think.
He's been outside revving his Fiesta.
Has he got a Fiesta?
He does. It's a Ferrari coloured. Apparently, Aubameyang, if anybody hasn't heard, was revving his Ferrari outside when he was supposed to be in the stadium.
Thanks for explaining that, George. Cause I didn't have a clue what you were talking about there.
Well, that's the rumour. That's why he was left out of the team at the weekend.
He drives a Fiesta, Callum. He's probably got a few copies of Fiesta under the bed as well. Eh?
I thought you were going to say Aubameyang drove a Fiesta. That'd be an interesting footballer's car. But anyway, enough of this frivolity and jolliness, because we've got some... It's probably not going to be the cheeriest of podcasts, this one, I would say.
We'll make it cheery, George.
I haven't been at Dens Park last night, and then obviously an omission from the Scotland squad we'll talk about in due course. First of all, United didn't have a game of the weekend, so we'll talk about Dundee first of all. Having two games since we've last been recording. First one was a good afternoon's work against Arbroath, winning 2-0, clean sheet. A couple of goals, Danny Mullen and Max Anderson. Penalty save from incoming goalkeeper Adam Legston, and it was all around, it was decent day's work. Got 3 points on the board, but then, as Dundee seemed to do on a regular occurrence, they weren't able to back up their good play, and it felt a really poor 3-1 home defeat to Ayr United in midweek on Tuesday night. I was there. It wasn't a good night. First goal came from Paul McGowan getting robbed in the middle of the park, which is very unlike him. And from there, it didn't look like Dundee were going to get back into the game the way they played. Is that the way you saw it, Bear?
Yeah, I mean, I was hoping to come on here as well, George, with exactly the same line, saying hoping Dundee have now turned the corner. And it's a good corner to turn with a home straight ahead of them, you know, after that win against Arbroath. And that was purely down to the fact that obviously they got the 3 points, which was good, yeah. But the clean sheet was the thing for me. I was very impressed with Legsden's performance in the goal. He looked sharp, he looked lively, made a couple of good saves. Obviously, the penalty stopped.
He's very loud, by the way. When you're in the stand, he's extremely loud.
But that's good. That's what a keeper should be. I mean, and maybe you'll notice that more than me when Jack Hamilton's in the goal in an empty ground. Maybe you don't hear Jack so much. Maybe that's something he's got to add to his game.
It's not bad, but Legsden's really, he was yelling at everybody, even people that across in the other half and stuff. Yeah. He was telling them what to do.
But it was a good all-round display, and it was a hard you know, hard won 3 points because, you know, Arbroath are a tough team, as we've seen. They didn't give anything away easily. So, yeah, and I thought Dundee turned the corner and you know, but a typical, you know, as a Dundee fan, you know, they go and blow it in the next game. And Dundee have, let's be honest, over the course of the season, Dundee have had some reasonable performances. I don't think we've ever seen them at their scintillating best, if they could ever get to a scintillating best, but they've had some reasonable performances, they've had mediocre performances, and they've had a couple of stinkers, and unfortunately they've both come against the same team, and it's Ayr United. They put in a really, really poor performance at Somerset Park earlier on in the season, when there was a lot of talk in the change room after the game, how, you know, where they'd gone wrong, and Paul McGowan was particularly vociferous after that one, and they've gone and done it again last night. You know, just looking back at the game, the first goal is an absolute calamity for Paul McGowan. The Dundee are sitting quite high up the park, they're just inside their own half, and to be fair to the young lad Fisher, I think he was on the ball. If Paul McGowan asked for the ball, you're going to give him it. I think maybe a more experienced player would assess the situation and went, no, I'm not giving it there, it's a wee bit tight, we're right on the halfway line. But he gave it to McGowan. And to be fair to David Hopkin, he's done his homework straight away, and he knows that a lot of the stuff will go through Paul McGowan and will go through Charlie Adam. And as soon as McGowan and Adam are getting the ball in that first half, they were getting closed down very quickly. And that's exactly what happened for the goal. An unusual poor first touch for Paul McGowan, I've got to say. He's normally very composed in those situations. But when it bobbles off his knee, when the boy gets a run on him, he's struggling to get back, obviously. And, you know, they go down by squares. And I don't think it was a clean hit from McKenzie, to be fair. But I think it bamboozled Adam Legsdon's in the goal a wee bit. And you're suddenly up against it straight away, straight from the off. But there's still plenty of time. There's plenty of time to go in the game. So that's a good thing. It's not the last minute. You know, it's well inside, you know, chance for Dundee, anyway, to go and do something. But the big thing for me was there seemed to be a lack of urgency, a lack of fight in the team, a lack of desire to get back in the game. And that is a real worrying aspect for James McPate going forward. Obviously, they lose the second goal. Christy Elliott has had some good performances for Dundee. He's keeping Cammy Kerr out of the team. But he's got. I'm not sure if it was McKenzie, George. Maybe you can tell me. Was it McKibben?
It was Reading, I think.
The guy's facing the south enclosure. He's goal side of him. You know, he's going nowhere. And the one thing you can't allow to happen is for that guy to go around you in the space of sort of 2 yards on the byline. And he did that. Normally what a defender would do in that situation is you pull the man down. You give away the free kick and you get yourself set up to take a free kick. It's going to be a free kick just in from the corner flag, effectively. So you're not going to be in any real danger if you get yourself set up, probably.
But then that's maybe with Christy Elliott being a former winger. Attacking player.
And then it comes across, it breaks off Charlie Adam, I think it was. A false to Cammy Smith. And again, it wasn't the cleanest of strikes, but I think because he bobbled it, I think Adam Legsdon would have preferred a better struck shot, and it seemed to bobble over the top of him and end up, or go through his legs or something, and end up in the far corner. And from that moment on, Dundee were just really dire, I've got to say. I mean, it was just such a poor performance, and you can look at the pitch and say, well, the pitch wasn't great, but it's the same for both teams. I've got to give credit to David Hopkin again. He's an experienced manager. As I've spoken about Charlie Adam in possession, I've spoken about Paul McGowan in possession, you know, they were quickly closed down. You also did a job on Paul McMullen, boys doubling up on him, and something's trebling up on him, if you saw that. I mean, you get that. That means you've got to sometimes take another route. But then you saw across the park, I mean, Jordan Marshall has been one of the top performers, if not the top performer for Dundee this season. But Cammy Smith gave him a real hard time. And, you know, it's the first game I've seen Jordan Marshall not really getting as forward as much as he normally does in games, and having to worry more about defending in games. And there were a few other poor performances. I would take out the young lad Fisher, who I thought did a reasonable job, and there he is, still very young, but he looked as though he wanted to come forward and try and play a bit of football.
I thought he was fine, yeah.
Yeah. The third goal again, it's, you know, does Elliot again, comes inside, and a great finish, you know, and it's one of those, you go, it's one of these, but at no time did Dundee ever look like getting back in the game. And the goal from Osmond South, credit to him for coming on and getting a goal. Was it, you know, I put a gloss on the performance, which it didn't really merit. And I think when you see other, you know, I think you're looking up front, Jason Cummins, nothing was sticking early on. I think maybe the tactics were a wee bit off, and James McPake has already alluded to that in his after-match presser. I think when you're playing on a pitch like that, it's more a case of getting the ball up front and trying to win the second balls. Now, if you're only playing one man up front and there's 30 or 40 yards between him and another player, it's tough. It's tough, but Jason Cummins, well, no, he should have done better, and a lot of the balls were getting played, it just wasn't sticking for him. And all in all, it was just a dreadful, dreadful night for Dundee, and you just left scratching your head. Obviously, there is a solution. They can go and beat Owl on Friday, and 6 points from the last nine wouldn't be looking too bad, but we're now in the stage, like I've said, we're into the final straight, so defeats now, you know, can be, you know, fatal, effectively. You can't afford to fall off the pace. And, you know, I think for Dundee fans, you know, they've not been great this season, but even though being great this season, finishing outside the playoff spots is unthinkable. Mm-hmm. It's unthinkable for Dundee, you know, so, and I'm sure the manager is aware of that, so they've really got to get their act together starting on Friday.
No, I'd agree with that, and just thinking about the game last night, usually doing the kind of on the whistle kind of online reports and stuff, you leave the intro bit to the last 10 minutes or whatever, and you can figure out how the game's gone. But I pretty much had that written with half an hour to go, because I just couldn't see anything in the Dundee performance that would see them getting back into the game. And Sean, I found it interesting that the manager kind of admitted to a bit of naivety with concerns with the way the pitch was and trying to play football on a bobbly pitch, and accepting that Ayr went about it the right way. Is that a bit of a concern to you? Managers wouldn't normally kind of admit to sort of stuff like that.
No, they probably wouldn't ordinarily. This is one of the things about James McPake. It's actually it's quite endearing as a character trait that he seems like a human being rather than this robotic.
I do like his honesty.
Yeah, he's not a like robotic, cliche, employing manager type who is full of excuses or this and that. If he feels he's got it wrong, he tends to take it on the chin. And it's endearing, but is it also concerning? Aye, maybe. certainly at this stage of the season, and after as long as he's had, he's still a young manager. He's still not hugely experienced, but and managers make mistakes, even experienced ones sometimes. They wouldn't admit them. I think he's maybe not done himself any favours with that, despite the fact that it's endearing as a character trait. But I mean, Bear kind of touched on it there. They're by no means detached from Dunfermline, right? It's only 3 points. We've got 8 games to go. But for me, and I've said this a few times before, if you look at Dundee, the squad they've got, I'm guessing at the money they spent, but let's not pretend that's a cheaply assembled squad at that level. It won't be. Now, for me, if you're not finishing second, I think that's an underperformance. And if you don't finish in the playoffs, I think that's catastrophic. I think that's really, really poor. So this is why, when we're getting to this stage of the season, the pressure is really starting to mount now. Yeah. Because it's awfully touch and go, isn't it? It's far tighter than they would have liked.
The league is ridiculously tight. I mean, you look from second to 10th, is only 13 points.
Yeah.
But, well, looking at Ayr, I mean, obviously they changed their manager just a few weeks ago, and they dropped into the wrong playoffs, if you will. Do you think at another club that James McBeak, they may have made that decision that done with that sort of record at a different club? And Dundee are obviously very patient with their manager.
They always have been. Well, they not always have been, but certainly under when it's been John Nelms that is doing the sacking, they've been patient. Albeit it may be Tim Keyes' decision ultimately. We don't know that, but they certainly haven't been quick to pull the trigger at the times when they felt they've needed to. You can go back to Paul Hartley. With that, he wasn't one of their appointments, but they removed him.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were around when he got appointed, I think.
That was Scott Gardner was involved in that appointment.
And part of it.
Bill Colvin was still the chairman, technically, yeah, I think, at that time. But so when it was Hartley's time, that didn't happen until there'd been a 7-game losing streak, I think.
Yeah.
At that point, and then if you look at Neil McCann, after that, that was similar. Yeah, that was I think maybe seven defeats in 8 games or something like that at the start of a season, and that was it there. Jim McIntyre slightly different, but I mean he might be one that would argue that he didn't get the same time as the other ones, but that situation by the time that ended was getting pretty toxic, I think, in general. So it was time for a change there. James McPake, now look at his record, it's nothing like as bad as he's never been on as bad a run as Hartley or McCann's teams were on, and there hasn't been a relegation like a McIntyre team, and in fact he's only 3 points off second in the championship. So
going
by the way that John Nelms and Tim Keyes have handled managerial departures before, you wouldn't think he's really anywhere near it. But I would think if they're not in the playoffs come the end of the season, I don't see any way that he stays in that job, and unless John Nelms is really, really committed to James McPake as a young manager and he's willing to give him the time to develop. But beyond that, I think if you don't finish in the playoff places with this Dundee side, it's curtains, I think.
I agree with that, Sean. I think the manager knows as well himself that playoffs are an absolute minimum, and he's aware of his own record so far as Dundee manager as well, obviously. One issue I think he's had, or one issue the fans have took issue with, taking an issue with an issue, but was the change of formation after doing well against Arbroath with a 4-4-2 and two wingers, getting Charlie Adam back in the team after his absence through the coronavirus positive test. I think with Charlie in the squad, in the team, you really need a three to give him the legs next to him. Do you think that ended up causing them, obviously you want a player with the quality of Charlie Adam in your team, but Baird, do you think that caused a bit of an issue? I keep saying issue, but do you think that caused a bit of a problem for
him? It might have. You know, formations for me are just formations. They can change at the kickoff because the other team plays a completely different formation and you've got to alter yours to accommodate it. Mm-hmm. I think more importantly for me it's continuity in team selection, George.
Yeah.
He seems to be making 3 and 4 changes every week. Now that's something you've been forced on him through one thing, like injuries or maybe some players have got COVID, but for Dundee it seems to happen every single game, and they very rarely put the same team out twice. I mean, you look at right throughout the team, is there one player you could see has played in one position consistently this season? You could look at Jordan Marshall, maybe. You could maybe look at Charlie Adam, who's basically been in there. But other than that, I mean, you look right throughout the team, the centre-back pairings have changed. The right-back has changed. Middle of the park, you know, he's had McGowan playing deep. He's had McGowan playing up top, you know, and the wide men in that area have changed. We've had Burnin there, up top. We've obviously he's brought in Cummins and McMullen. So, you know, he's changed it with that. But I'm thinking back to when Dundee United went through the championship, like a dose of salts in their final season. And just like you say, they were down there for 4 years. So it wasn't something that happened straight off. But Robbie built the backbone of that team sort of 6 months before their championship winning season. But when he had his team in place, he very rarely changed it unless there were injuries in there and he was forced to do it, or suspensions or something like that. So as much as the formation change, yeah, I mean, I do think it certainly didn't work on Tuesday night with Cummins up there on his Todd. You know, it certainly didn't work, and he was left isolated at times and the ball was bobbling about all over the place and we couldn't get it. But the players could have certainly done better. There's no doubt about that. But it's more team continuity that worries me. You kind of keep making 3 and 4 changes to your team and expect it to function properly, and that's a big issue he's got, you know, going forward. And it's an issue that you know, bigger teams have in that league, and it's because they've got bigger squads. clubs like Arbroath and, you know, maybe Ayr United and the Aloes of this world, and even your own team, George, Queen of the South, they'll not have the same squad. So the manager doesn't have that, you know, a lot of people say it's a good headache to have, having, but it's not.
Too many good players.
Yeah, well, it just gives you how we're going to fit so-and-so in. Well, you can't play, so I can do that, I've changed the formation. So, you know, it gets the wheels going around in your head. You know, I think back to when Dundee, you know, when they were sadly in administration, and they only had about 13 players, you know, and the same team went out on the park every week with one or two additions. Neil McCann was obviously one of them that got pulled in as a sort of, you know, a ringer, if you like, for one of the games, because they couldn't sign anyone. They only had about 13 players, and unfortunately, they got through that season and they went on a great run. So, yeah, that's the biggest problem for Mike Peake. Team continuity, I would suggest. He's got to get a team. He's got to get a settled team. How he does that in the last eight games, but we kind of keep saying three and four changes every game.
Continuity was one of the things that season, but I covered Dundee every week mm-hmm. that season, Bear. You remember?
Yeah, yeah.
That was my first season as a football writer, that. And the other thing about them, beyond the continuity that season, was they never knew they were beaten.
Yeah.
They just never, they did not give up ever. In any game, once that run started rolling, there was no way they were going to give in on anything. And I'm not sure from what you're saying about the team last night, George, that the sort of way they looked after going two down, is that spirit there in that group?
Well, that's the big question they're going to have to answer between now and the end of the season. For me, the quality's there. In terms of individual quality, it's getting the quality of team together that's the big issue. Obviously, the way the championship is, play Aloe on Friday night ahead of everybody else playing at the weekend, Dundee can go equal second. So, I mean, the championship, I always call it just a bastard of a league, to be honest, because everybody beats everybody. You don't get given anything
except for that.
yeah, apart from that. Generally, you have to work extremely hard to get anything. I can guess the answer to this, but are we maybe overreacting to this because the championship's just that nature of the league?
No. George, but you've just said it. That's not a surprise. It's been like that for years. You know, but obviously United romped through it, and Hearts have pretty much done so again this season. But for everyone else, you could quite easily get relegated as well as get promoted going into the last six games. it's normally that tight. And what I would say as well, I mean, Dundee, over the past 18 months or so, their performances suggest they're actually going backwards. Now, that must be a real concern because, I mean, you look at the clubs in League One and you think, well, Dundee couldn't end up in there, surely. But the league's that tight. You just never know sometimes. A bad run, you could end up sort of scrambling a wee bit. I mean, you look down there, the Partick Thistle, no think that they shouldn't be in League One. The Falkirk, no think that they should be in League One. So it's no beyond the realms of possibility. But the championship shouldn't become a surprise to anyone. But yeah, you're right. They can go to Aloe on Friday and things will look rosy again. Certainly for 24 hours if they can get a win. But anyone who's been to Aloe watching their team and think of 3 points are going to come easily. They're sadly mistaken. It was Dundee had to produce a comeback, a fine comeback to earn a point the last time they were there. And I would expect another tough game on Friday night.
Yeah, and well, Aloe. Yeah, I know from my team, Queen of the South, that they've beaten us twice in the past few weeks. The only team to beat us at the moment. We just kind of get better on their. That a tricky old side. They could play a bit as well. But just in terms of on the injury front, we're talking about the kind of centre-back problems they've got. Sam Fisher came in, did quite well, considering the rest of the performance from the team. Fagan Walcott's hurt his hamstring at the game against Arbroath. And then Liam Fontaine actually sounds like he might have a chance for the game on Friday. So that's a positive, because he's been good when he's come in. I actually bumped into Alex Kubiak at the game on Tuesday night, and he was in good spirits, says he's been doing some running. So maybe he'll be back to add a bit up front. But then, once more, as you say, Bert, it's figuring out how to get these good players in the team. And they're things are looking good for Jordan McGee. They just need the kind of the green light from the surgeon. But hopefully, maybe getting those players back puts Dundee in a better frame of mind. We've probably talked enough about Dundee. We should maybe move on across the road and see what's been happening at Tannadice. It's been a fairly quiet week for United. They've had a bit of a breather, no game at the weekend. Aberdeen coming up next in the last game before the split. The big news this week is obviously the Scotland squad. And I have to say, I was pretty shocked when I saw that Mr. Shankland had been left out and he'd been replaced. I wasn't surprised at the Che Adams coming in, but Kevin Nisbet coming in, considering the form, his form hasn't been great since the turn of the year. I mean, do you guys agree with that? Were you surprised?
No.
You weren't surprised?
No. No, I wasn't. No, I'm not being funny. I wasn't shocked about Shankland not being in there. And I take your point about Nisbet in particular.
It's the timing for me.
Yeah, I mean, you could actually, you could probably say that worry to be dropped. It might have made more sense if it was last time.
That's what I was thinking, because obviously at the start of the season, Nisbet was banging them in.
Yeah.
Shankland was struggling, and Shankland got the call ahead of Nisbet. Yeah. But it's been, Shankland hasn't been banging them in, but he's scored three in his last five, and Nisbet's scored twice in about 3 months or something.
Yeah. It's in that sense, it's interesting. But in general,
yeah,
if you look at the way the season's gone there, I wasn't shocked. I wasn't sitting going, oh my God, Lawrence Shankland's not in the Scotland squad. Whatever's happened, I think we all know what's happened. he's come into this. He came into the Scotland squad as a championship player off the back of an incredible sort of three seasons with Ayr United and with Dundee United. His goal return over those campaigns was unreal. Like, genuinely incredible. It was, I can't remember the exact numbers off the top of my head, but it was in the 90s for goals in 3 years and something like 110, 112 appearances. It's crazy. So to have got himself into the position of being in the Scotland squad as a championship player off the back of that goal return was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since he's come up, the question immediately becomes, how does he handle the step up? Now, I still don't think we really know the answer to that question, because Mickey Mellon's quite rightly pointed out in the last week or so that the Lawrence Shankland that got all those goals over the last 3 years hasn't been the Lawrence Shankland we've seen this season because of the way that United have had to handle their games. They haven't been on the front foot, and Shankland hasn't been lurking about the penalty box for the best part of 90 minutes. He's had to do other things. And that's obviously had an impact on his goal return. So, I mean, you can see with Mickey Mellon, again, this week saying, you know, he can lead the line for Scotland because his game has had to evolve, and he's now capable of leading the line for United against the best teams in the country. I mean, it's a PR attempt on Mickey Mellon's part to try and keep his name in the conversation. But, I mean, the reality of it is that Shankland now isn't the hot property that he was, and it's not necessarily his fault. I do feel for him in that regard. Nisbet sort of swapped it around, and you look at Birmingham City coming in and offering money for him, big money as well. Shankland's not had that. It just seems to me that the hot property has become more Nisbet than Shankland at this point, which is so I can if you think about it that way, I can understand why Shankland's not in the squad. But he himself, I'm sure he will be really, really frustrated about it, because the prospect of losing a place now just before the European Championships must be just so annoying.
Yeah,
having done the hard work to get there.
That's exactly the point that I was going to make and ask Bear about. I mean, obviously we're just a few months until the Euros. He never really has to kick on for the rest of the season. United season, doesn't he, Bear?
Yeah, I mean, we touched on this a few weeks ago on the podcast. Actually, more than a few weeks ago, how it was open for Shankland, you know, because you were looking at the Scotland strikers and none of them were scoring and worryingly for Steve Clarke, none of them still are scoring. So it's an area of the team that's always been tough, you know. I mean, you get to international, even when you had sort of scorers who were banging them in at club level, found difficulty in scoring for Scotland. And we're talking about Ali McCoy and things like that. Because
Chris
Scotland,
Boyd and stuff.
And, yeah, Scotland inevitably play a different style of football. They tend to be a bit more, you know, on the back foot because you are playing against sort of tougher opposition at times. And you do need someone who can effectively lead the line well. And Lyndon Dykes did that to a point. McBurney's got a bit about him. But, I mean, none of them are scoring goals. When Steve Clarke said that in his presser, he's got to try and find somebody who can come in there and of very little, a few scraps, is going to pinch a goal for Scotland. Because that's the way we're going to set up at these Euros. We need somebody who's, when the ball comes along, it's going to be in the back of the onion bag and we can maybe get away with a win. Obviously, I would have loved to have seen Lee Griffiths in there. I think he's a man who's a big game player, but you know, you just wonder what frame of mind Lee Griffiths is in. He hasn't played much football for Celtic. You know, he's been out of the team more than in the team this season. So it's a real headache for Steve Clarke. In terms of Lawrence Shankland, I think we've got to, Steve Clarke's going to have a look at this. But for Lawrence Shankland to get himself back in, he has to really go on a scoring spree between now and the end of the season. I mean, how many games is there left? Six. It's not really much time. I feel for him because
the Scottish Cup as well.
Yeah, Sean's absolutely right. You know, the way United have played this season, they've had to, you know, be a bit more defensive, and that's worked for them, and that's why the club's sitting rosy in that respect. But it's starved Lawrence Shankland of the sort of supply that he got previously, and that means he's been limited to what he can do. But even then, I still think there have been occasions this season where we've seen Lawrence Shankland being in positions where you thought he might have done better. Certain games that I've seen him being in positions where I thought if that was Lawrence Shankland of the last couple of seasons, he would have scored. Now, you can say, well, he's playing in the Premier League, so it's tougher anyway, but not when it's one-on-one with a goalkeeper. When you're in there, it's just you and him. I mean, some goalkeepers are better than others, but effectively, a striker who is good at picking the ball at the back of the net, or putting the ball in the back of the net, will always be able to do that. But this season, he seems to have screwed a few wide. He's hit the goalkeeper more often than not, and it's just not worked for him, sadly. And I think turning it back to Dundee United, Sean said, you know, what was Shankland's value 12 months ago? What was his value sort of 18 months ago, 2 years ago? What's his value now? And that must be a concern for United, because I think he's coming up to the last year of his contract anyway. But what is his value for Dundee United? I mean, we were talking a seven-figure sum, and that wouldn't have looked out of place last season, at the end of last season. But, I don't think we're talking anything like that now, you know? So that must be a concern for the owners at United.
By the way, can I just chip in quickly on Nisbet? Because I know the way we were talking about him, and well, he's kind of gone off the boil a bit. I mean, that might be slightly
he's a
true,
good player.
But he is a good player. And, I mean, there's a bunch of stats that Hibs themselves have actually tweeted out. This afternoon, and he's sitting with the most goal involvements of any Scottish player in the Premiership with 16. He's the top scoring Scotsman in the Premiership. He's got the highest XG for any player in the Premiership that's eligible for Scotland. Second most shots on target for any Scottish player in the Premiership this season. So
Hibs are obviously trying to sell him then, is that what you're trying to say?
I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think if they can get him in a Scotland squad at the Euros, yeah,
absolutely.
Well, shoot up as well. So,
well, it is, of course it is, yeah.
So, I mean, all of those, I mean, if you look at those stats, I mean, quite clearly he's had a very good season and he is a good player. So I don't think we can be too shocked that he's had the nod. I think perhaps the only shock is that he didn't get it before now.
Yeah, that's my surprise. In the way that it's kind of happened, because he struggled a bit since that offer came in Birmingham. I don't know whether it turned his head or whatever, but
I'd be hard, but I'd be surprised if it didn't.
I know it was a big deal. In terms of, I suppose we should really talk about Dundee United rather than a Hibs player, but interesting game at the weekend. Aberdeen, obviously, United can't, well, they can get their top six place, but things have to really go their way.
No, they can't.
They have to really, really go their way.
Let's not even pretend that that's going
well, the manager's already given up, so I suppose. But it'd be, obviously, this is Aberdeen's first game without Darren McInnes, so
yeah,
interesting to see how that might affect them. Do you think that might be a good thing for United or a bad thing?
Well, we'll find out, won't we? I don't I honestly don't know. I spent a lot of time covering Aberdeen over the last few years for the Sunday Post, but I haven't watched them regularly this season. So I think the McInnes thing, I'll not delve into it too far, but it's probably the case that it's gone a wee bit stale. It'd probably run its course up there. Change needed. Paul Sheeran is part of the backroom team up there. I'm not sure that means that there will be a particularly huge feeling of change this week at Aberdeen going into this game. They might get a slight freshness out of it. On paper, I would still say Aberdeen are favourites for the game. United, I mean, if they can win 8-0, they're in the top six.
And if Lawrence Shanklin scores 7, he'll be in the Scotland squad.
It'd be sod's law, wouldn't it?
I'm slightly exaggerating. But I mean, what sort of Aberdeen are they going to face? They'll face a good one. Aberdeen, despite the fact that they've had the managerial change and what have you, they're not a bad side. Although, I mean, if you listen to the grumbling of Aberdeen fans, you would think they are. But they're maybe not the prettiest side to watch, but what they've always been is pretty effective, pretty stubborn. So you'll not get an easy ride against Aberdeen. Nobody will. So United do have a tough prospect.
And the problem of late in terms of Aberdeen's form has been scoring goals. They've really not scored any in quite a few games now. I can't remember the exact stat. I don't know if it's 2-8 or something. United, throughout the season, have struggled a bit for goals, so should we expect a bit of an epic on Saturday, Bill?
You've certainly sold that game to the viewer, eh? I'll certainly pay for that stream. I think they're looking, I don't think we'll see too much of a change from Aberdeen. Paul Sheeran will probably stick to party lines and it'll be a similar sort of side. Obviously, Barry Robson's involved there as well, so he'll be getting the message. Barry was always a midfielder who liked to score goals, so I'm sure he's got his message across in training that they need to, they need to be better in attacking third, and obviously they need a break. But obviously we're hoping it's not against Dundee United. That's for sure. I mean, United want to finish the season as strongly as they possibly can, and it'd be good to see them getting a few goals and the game being quite open. But frankly, I just don't see that happening. I think it will be quite a tight game. But an opportunity. I mean, even if obviously Aberdeen have still got designs on catching Hibs, and so to do that they've got to really get 3 points at Tannadice on Saturday. That should make it interesting. If that being the case, you'd like to think that there might be opportunities for Lauren Shanklin, for McNulty, for Nicky Clark if he's playing, Louis Perry, to get in behind the Aberdeen defence. But Aberdeen are particularly solid in the back as well. I quite like their back line. I like their goalkeeper Joe Lewis. I think he's made a couple of sort of well documented sort of bloopers this season, but in general he's a good keeper and their back line is pretty solid, so yeah, it could be one of those 0-0 draws that nobody wants to watch, George.
Well, you have a go at me for not selling the game.
I did my best here. I'm sorry if anybody is listening. I'm sorry. Hope it's 3-3.
I think somebody will score, come on.
An early goal, and that'll kick it off. That's just what you need. Sometimes you get those strange days in Scottish football when they just kind of keep the ball out, although that tends to be a dense part, no tandy.
It often happens with two teams that struggle to score that they finally meet each other and then they start scoring. So fingers crossed it's one of those. But it'd be good to see United back in action, obviously. And they'll be interested to see what their fixtures are like for the post-split. Hopefully playing against the teams in the bottom half might give Shanklin that chance to get some of the goals that might get him back in that Scotland squad. But in terms of a few newsy things obviously happening over the past week since we've been on, Mark Ogren issued a statement on the back of selling his baseball team, the Canaries, Sioux Falls Canaries, saying it's going to give him even more time to put into Dundee United, which is a good thing to hear. And obviously United have given new contracts to a whole bunch of youngsters that are not releasing any of their under-18s that are on full-time contracts, which I think is a really good kind of statement from the club, because obviously that's often the age where players they're too old for the youth teams, but they're not quite ready for first team football. Sean, United putting a lot of faith and a lot of resources into their youth setup. Mm-hmm. Whether these guys kind of make it to the first team, they're certainly been given the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, they certainly are. But I mean, having started down the road of putting a lot of not just effort but money into your academy, I think if you are a year down the road to sort of turn back on that and let a whole load go, it wouldn't be the best sort of look, really. So good on them for sticking with it. I think it indicates that the plan that actually has been referenced in recent weeks by Derek Bond, finance director, what have you, that they purposefully have made a large scale infrastructural investment into their youth academy, if you like. They're not just going to cut and run off the back of what clearly been very testing times during the pandemic. So for that, fair play to them. And also, I mean, for the young players themselves who are being kept on, it's great for them too. The law of averages would state that many of them won't make it to the United first team. They may make it to first teams elsewhere. But, you know, it just shows a real commitment to this strategy of developing young players. Yeah. And fair play to them for it.
And what it does for me is give you a kind of a platform as well. If you've got a whole bunch of good youngsters there, if something happens like a pandemic or something comes out of the blue and it really hits you financially, then you've got kind of bedrock of players there waiting that can come in or you can move them on or whatever. I think it's the best way forward for Scottish football clubs, and United seem to be putting a lot into it. From a personal point of view, I know one of them, the young lad Flynn Duffy. He's been part of the futsal set up for a few years. He plays with Dundee Celtic. They won the league last year. So I've chased him around the futsal court a few times, caught him yet.
But, he got some techers, has he?
He's a pretty good wee player, he is. He doesn't say anything, but I'm glad to see him getting his chance at United. And if I needed an advert for people to come and join my futsal league, then he's it. So MD Fans is it. Come along. There's my wee plug. Since I'm in charge, since I've got the hot seat, let's go.
George, you wouldn't know if he said anything because you couldn't catch him. That was the problem. You might have been speaking to all the rest of the players, but you couldn't get near him.
Probably. He could probably actually nip under my legs, to be honest. He's about half a size.
Futsal's maybe not a bad idea for me. I don't know about what you guys are like, but the lockdown belly is outrageous.
Well, it'll work on that because you have to do a lot of chasing. Yeah, all right. Certainly, I do the way I play the game. Uh-huh. But anyway, aside from that, we should probably move on. We've talked a wee bit about Lauren Shanklin not being in the Scotland squad, so let's have a look kind of more closely at who actually is in the squad. Now, Scotland, I have to say, it come out of the blue for me. I had no awareness that Scotland had games next week until about Monday, which maybe shows how much my head's in the sand these days during lockdown with a 9-month-old baby. But it's not her fault. I'm not blaming her. But it's all my fault. Playing Austria next Thursday, then Israel, because we always play Israel in every international game week. And then we've got the Faroes at the end of the month, World Cup qualifying. I'll ask you first, Blair. Aside from obviously Shanklin not being in there, what was the standout for you in Steve Clarke's squad that he's announced this week?
I think the standout is there isn't a standout, and it's no surprise, to be perfectly honest. Steve Clarke will be loyal to those guys who have managed to get him, you know, to the Euros, certainly. At the back, it looks pretty much the same. Obviously, there are a couple of inclusions. One, Grant Hanley, he's a guy who's been in and out of the Scotland squad, and to me, he does pretty much what it says on the tin. He's not really mobile enough for my liking, but he is a big lad, and he wins his fair share of headers. So he knows he'll not be a stranger in that squad. obviously Jack Henry coming in, you could say that he's a bit of a surprise. I mean, and hopefully this will get Jack back on track, shall we say, because when he was at Dundee...
I could tell you had right headlines for 11.
But yeah, absolutely. You get Jack back on track. But when he was at Dundee, you know, he had potential there. You saw that. I mean, under McCann, you saw he was... one thing he had as a defender, he had pace. And that's what managers love, because most defenders are pretty, you know, he's the exact opposite of Grant Hanley in that respect. You know, he can cover the ground quickly. And that covers a multitude of sins. And many times did we see him at Dundee getting himself into a bit of bother, because Dundee liked playing out from the back under McCann. You know, he'd lose the ball, but because he's quick over sort of 10, 15 yards, he could get himself back in behind and get himself going again. But unfortunately for Jack Henry, he had potential to be a good player, but Jack Henry thought he was already a good player when he was at Dens.
Oh, he definitely did.
Yeah, and I think he learned a few lessons. He obviously got his move to Celtic, but it didn't quite pan out the way he thought it was going. And his career has gone backward. He's been in Australia, hasn't he? He had injury problems. Yeah. I'm delighted. I'm delighted to see him back, because he's a big lad and he is a footballer. But I'd be surprised if he plays in the games, to be honest with you. He might, no disrespect to the Faroe Islands, we might get him in for that one if he wants to have a look at him. But I think there's others ahead of him in the pecking order. And I think it'll be a case of maybe Steve Clarke just wanting to have a look at him in the international environment and see how he does, and going forward there might be a place for him. But it gives him an opportunity, and you've got to grasp that opportunity. We've seen that with Clarke. You know, if somebody comes in and does well, you know, the door will open for him for the Euros, because as I say, this squad isn't going to change that much for the European Championships in the summer. So there are sort of a few places available, but somebody's going to have to grasp them when they get that. And hopefully Jack can do that. But elsewhere, I'm just looking through the squad that you've kindly sent me, George, and there's not that many surprises. Che Adams, and I'm gonna pass on that one, because I know absolutely nothing about Che Adams.
He's a good player.
You know, I haven't seen enough of him, so I'll pass that one over to Sean to give us some information on him.
Have you got the portfolio ready, Sean?
No, I don't. But what I do think is interesting is that he was asked, I believe, to if he wanted to represent Scotland a number of years ago, and knocked it back. So, funnily enough, now we've qualified for a tournament, he's interested.
Suddenly available again.
Call me a cynic.
Imagine that.
But look, we're not in a position where we can sort of turn our noses up at good players if they're available to us. And if he comes in and does a job in these World Cup qualifiers, he'll go to the tournament. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And frankly, if he does a job for us in the qualifiers and goes to the tournament, does a job there, I'll be delighted with that. I don't care. I don't care what he said last time. It's fine.
I think also, George, just sorry, jumping in, I think what Steve Clarke is trying to instill in the Scotland squad as a club mentality.
Yeah,
and to do that, you do need continuity of selection. That's why he's going to stick with these guys. And we saw that in the sort of the playoff games, you know, the penalty victories over Israel, the penalty victory over Serbia. You know, you look at guys like Ollie McBurney, he comes on and he looks as though he just can't be bothered, Ollie McBurney. You know, and he trots about on the park and it looks like it doesn't mean anything to him. And he was accused of certain things as well, you know, about not being sort of fully behind the cause. But I think anyone who saw those pictures after, you know, that David Marshall saved that penalty against Serbia, you know, every player, you know, was 100% behind Steve Clarke and the Scotland cause that night. And that's great. I mean, you can't really bottle that and sell it. If you could, you'd be worth millions, you know. So that's what Steve Clarke's trying to bring in. Because let's be fair, we're going to go to the Euros here and there's going to be quite a number of teams that are a lot technically better than we are. So we're going to have something else. And we touched on it with Dundee. You know, you've got to have that desire to play for your mates. You know, go out there and look after yourself on the park and play for the badge, play for Scotland. And that's what we've got to do. And if we do that, we've got a chance of being successful.
Yeah, I would agree. The things that kind of jumped out at me, obviously Craig Gordon being back in the squad, I think he's been an excellent signing for Hearts this season. Kind of showing Celtic what they're missing with their choice to change goalies last year. Obviously, Henry, as you mentioned, we've got three left-backs in there. Sean, does that maybe suggest that he's looking at a back three as well as a back four?
He's given himself options, certainly. He's used the back three previously. You're going to you're going to say this is my my own bias that's informing this, but I still think there was a place for Sean Rooney in there.
Quite possibly.
At the moment. I think if you look at...
He's been better than Stephen O'Donnell this season.
I don't think there's any argument about that. I think Sean Rooney's been superior to O'Donnell since he's come into Saints' side in every respect. So, I mean, perhaps what Bear says is correct, that he's trying to foster that club environment, and maybe he sees Stephen O'Donnell as a key personality in that or what have you. Or maybe it's just that he looks at Stephen O'Donnell and think, well, Sean Rooney's been good, but O'Donnell hasn't necessarily done anything drastically wrong.
He does know O'Donnell very well, obviously, from Kilmarnock.
And that as well, yeah. So, that, I mean, that'll all feed into it. But I do think, in terms of how their respective seasons are going, Sean Rooney, fantastic. And I think he would be a real weapon on the right-hand side for Scotland. I'm not saying he's a world beater. He's not a Kieran Tierney. He's not an Andy Robertson, quite clearly. But I think he's certainly comparable to O'Donnell, and actually has been better than O'Donnell this season. So I think he's been hard. He could think himself hard done by. There's also an argument for Jason Kerr being in there if you've got Declan Gallagher in there, because I think Jason Kerr's had a better season than Declan Gallagher has. But again, it could be this. You know, you stick with the guys who've done you, seen you okay before. And again, Declan Gallagher hasn't had a terrible season by any stretch. So, all right, I think both of them are in with a shout.
Yeah, I mean, Sean, you've touched on who you think should be in, but surely, if you're going to mention a St. Johnstone player, surely Xander Clark should be in before John McLaughlin.
Yeah, because Xander Clark plays.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's a really strange one. I just don't understand. And that would have been just reward, if you like, for what Xander Clark's done this season. You know, to play a guy who's basically been playing reserve football all season doesn't say too much at all, really.
I know. For me, you'd be as well putting the under-21 goal
in. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I absolutely, wholeheartedly agree with that one as well. And we've been here with Xander Clark before, actually. There wasn't too much of a campaign around him this time, funnily enough. There has been in the past, and it was when Alex McLeish was manager, but I remember a press conference when Peter Grant, who was the assistant, was actually asked about Xander Clark and why he hadn't been called up, and he pointed to a six. He conceded six against Celtic about the week before, but he'd been terrific in that match. If it wasn't for him, it would have been double that. You know what I mean? And then the rest of his record that season, I think St. Johnstone had conceded amongst the fewest goals in the league at that point.
So, I think that betrayed Peter Grant's the games. Yeah. Peter Grant's been watching, I think.
Well, I think that's exactly it. But also, I'll not labour this too much, but I still think that there's this view of a club like St. Johnstone, not just St. Johnstone. There'll be others who are in the same boat. But a national manager may well look at St. Johnstone and just immediately go, nah, it's not the level that we're looking for, really. And I think they're a victim of that sometimes. And that's probably partly what's happened here, because there's no doubt in my mind that Rooney at the moment is the hot one. But I think Jason Kerr, if you look at him, he's a great football player, a really, really good ball-playing centre-half. And he will move on from St. Johnstone, absolutely guaranteed. Within the next year or two, he'll get a move somewhere. And at that time, I bet he'll find himself in Scotland squads.
Well, we've seen it plenty of times before, haven't we? That's what happens. But just finally, we'll finish up just looking at the three matches themselves. Austria have had... they're going to have issues with their squad coming to the UK. They can't bring their Germany-based players, which is a couple of... David Alaba at Bayern Munich is obviously a very, very good player. And Sabitzer as well at Leipzig, he's a good player. So that maybe in a positive for Scotland. What are we thinking, lads? Three wins, obviously?
Well, take three wins. I mean, Austria come with a second-string squad and you look at that, God, that's great. That's music to every Scotland's fans' ears.
You actually
see them on the park, and you know they've still got 11 very, very good players on that pitch. Israel, we've had problems with in the past, and obviously you mentioned the Czech Republic, the same as Austria, George. But you know we did well to get past them that night by the skin of our teeth.
Yeah,
Israel, you know, and another team we've had problems with. and we're set up for, we're going to gob the Faroe Islands, yeah, right, okay, when it's nothing's up after, when it's nothing's up after, yeah. Nothing's up after about 75 minutes and everybody's scratching at the TV screen going, come on, Scotland, give us a goal. So, okay, what will I think? Two wins, I'll take that straight away, okay. I'm not saying who they're going to come against.
I'm going to go the same as you. I think 2 wins. I think we'll beat Israel and the Faroes, and I'm going to say we'll take a point off Australia.
Well, that's a good start.
That would be all right.
Oh, that would be a good start. Yeah,
I'm going to go all out. 3 wins, why not? But you've put the fear into me now, Bear, with it.
Scotland, 3 wins.
I know.
What planet are you? 3 wins in a row.
I don't know what I've been had for my lunch, but. You put the fear in me now, though, with the Faroes, remembering that it was not a game we didn't score until the 92nd minute or something, and then we drew the Faroes.
Yeah, a few draws in there as well, isn't it?
Right, so we're gonna beat Austria and Israel and draw with the Faroes. Well, that's the way Scotland do it.
I mean, the Faroe Islands, can they travel? Are we going there?
I'm sure they've got planes and boats and stuff. I think.
Yeah, I mean, can they get out? I mean, are they going to have to bring in a couple of sheep just to make up the numbers?
On that note, before we offend the entire nation of the Faroe Islands, I think we'll finish.
It's all right, there's not many of them. Take them.
So thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.
If you like the podcast, we'd be grateful if you tell your pals about it, or even better, leave a review or a simple rating on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. All that really helps people find Twa Teams One Street, and that means a lot to us. Don't forget to pick up your copy of The Tilly Monday to Saturday for all the latest from Dens and Tannadice, or go to thetilly.co.uk to find out how you can get the paper delivered right to your door.